4CRB 89.3 FM, your radio station.
And a very good morning to you. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for another program of The Law and You. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock daylight saving time. All we need you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. 55208888 is the number. That number again, 55208888. If you're south of the Tweed River, don't forget you need to put 07 in front of the number, but otherwise, if calling from the north of the Tweed and throughout Queensland, you'll get straight through 55208888. And certainly someone who was very quick out of the blocks this morning, we say a very good morning to Kay. G'day, Kay. How are you?
Good, thank you. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
I live in a body corporate building.
Mm-hmm.
And one person, we got a lot of students here,
mm-hmm.
one person puts a name down as a renter.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are three other people whom he re-subleases,
mm-hmm.
right? Units have got four people.
Mm-hmm.
And fact is that legal that if I put my name down and I can have three more people there go in and out like a cats in a village, they are students.
Mm.
And, you know, and the fact is that our water bill is so high at the moment.
Yes.
And they are all individual using the amenities and $100 a week.
Mm.
What is the law in there, please?
Well, firstly, it is a question for the owner of that actual apartment that the students are living in.
Yes.
And it is a question of what the agreement between the owner and the person who rented the property says. So if the agreement between the owner and the tenant says that the tenant is allowed to sublet rooms to other people to have boarders,
yes.
then there is nothing that can be done. Normally, on a tenancy agreement, it will say that there are X number of people permitted to occupy the property. So I think your first starting point with this problem, Kay, would be to speak or endeavour to speak to the owner of that unit, or alternatively, if you have a manager in the building, or I would be getting the manager to speak to the owner of the unit to find out what the tenancy agreement provides, whether it provides that the person who's renting the property can in fact sublet to other tenants, and if it does allow that, then obviously there won't be anything you can do, because it would be no different than if there was a family of four living in that apartment.
Actually, it's a bit different, but we have got four students per unit.
Mm.
They're all individual doing washing, showering and everything else.
Mm.
And the fact is that actually five units, some of outside rented.
Yep. So your apartments,
they don't save water, they don't do anything. They live maximum and they are young people
mm.
who are just not so considerate as normal people should be,
yeah.
because water rents are so high, one mm. water meter only in a complex.
I thought, though, that you could apply to the council to have sub-meters, Kay. So it might be worth speaking to the council about whether you can have water meters installed in the building for each individual unit.
The council told me that everyone should be in agreement to have them installed, because there are expenses involved.
Yes. All right. Well, again, that's something you'll need to speak to the body corporate about, Kay.
Sorry?
It's something you'll need to speak to the body corporate about, and so the body corporate should resolve to get individual meters put in for the individual units. But we'll have to leave it there, Kay, unfortunately. We've got a couple of other callers on the line.
Investing unit owners, they are very uncooperative.
Yes, well, you may then have to end up going to the body corporate commissioner. But we'll have to leave it there, Kay.
Thank
We've got other callers online.
Anyway. Thank you so much. I am one of the many.
No trouble. Bye-bye now. And the time just rolls along, just coming up to 5 minutes to 10, 5 minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and we say a very good morning to Frank. G'day, Frank. How are you?
Good morning, John.
How can we help?
Another simple one about wills, where there is a remaining beneficiary of the estate
mm-hmm.
and an executor that has interpreted the will in favour of the deceased party and their relatives, of which the executor is also an indirect beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, to what degree can an executor interpret the document in this case called a will.
Well, if there's dispute about the interpretation of the will, then the party who's affected by the adverse interpretation is at liberty to bring an application to the court for the court to rule on the proper construction of the terms of the will. So what I would suggest is that the remaining beneficiary should get some legal advice of their own in relation to the interpretation of the will, and then from there, if that advice is consistent with their view, then they could certainly, if the executor won't agree to vary their view on what the interpretation is, then they would bring an application to the court that the court interpret what the terms of the will are.
Okay. Mm. Now, the reason I make this phone call, John, as you can understand, is that it's cost-free. I've had an estimate on the costs of this action, having to go before the Supreme Court, could be as high as $100,000.
I don't think so. Not just to interpret a clause. I'm sorry, Frank. We're just in the process of doing one of these applications at the moment, and and there are three parties, I think, from memory, and I would think that the costs are probably going to be something in the order of $10,000. But, Frank, the starting point would be for the person concerned, what part of the Gold Coast do they live?
Southport.
Okay, what I would suggest you do then is go in and see the Citizens Advice Bureau. They're in Bay Street at Southport. Their telephone number is 553-29611.
Got it.
Okay, so 553-29611. Make an appointment or have the person make an appointment to go in and see them. Take the will in. They have lawyers there who give free legal advice, and if they think that the interpretation of the will is what we, a lay-down mazare, then obviously you would have considerable confidence in going to the court. But I would be getting a couple of opinions or estimates as to cost, because $100,000 is just beyond the pale.
Absolutely, but it's not unexpected. Okay, thank you, John.
Okay, Frank, all the very best. And the time just continues to roll along. It's just past 22 minutes to 10, 22 minutes to 11, daylight saving time. As we say, a very good morning to George. G'day, George. How are you?
Oh, hello, John. My question is about public liability.
Yep.
For instance, a group of people, just social friends, going for a walk or coffee or something like that, the person who arranges it all or is in charge of that group, are they responsible for the safety and well-being of the other people?
I wouldn't have thought so.
If they're just
a group of people who say, oh, look, why don't we walk down to the coffee shop at the end of the street and have a coffee, someone falls over on the footpath, for example, and it's a result of some defect in the footpath that has been there for a long time and the council's been warned about it and hasn't done anything, then the claim would be against the person who causes the injury, not against the person who organised the outing.
No, I actually thought that, but we've got different opinions on this and the person who organised it. So would it be different if a venue was hired and money was paid to hire that venue for a function?
Well,
and,
again, and if something happens at the venue and it's a fault of the owner of the venue, so say, for example, a railing collapses, then the venue has their own public liability insurance. If something happens at the venue as a result of some activity that's organised by someone. So say, for example, there's a karate competition organised and it's not run properly and you're simply renting a hall for the karate competition and someone gets injured because of the way it's organised, then obviously the organiser would be responsible. But it all depends on the circumstances. But certainly going for a walk or organising to go and have a coffee or saying to a group of friends, why don't we go and have lunch at, ABC restaurant, not an issue.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah, okay. Thanks
okay, then, George. All the very best. The Law and You is the program, 5520888, the number. your chance to get free legal advice today. All you need to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. 5520888 the number. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Are you serious about losing weight? VitaDiet has been helping Australians lose weight and live healthier since 1987. All VitaDiet shakes, soups, bars and desserts are gluten-free, made in Australia and have been perfected over 30 years. There's a VitaDiet eating plan and yes, you do eat real food. Plus, use the VitaDiet ketone sticks to gauge your fat-burning performance. To find out how you could lose up to 3 kilos in your first week, visit VitaDiet.com.au for your local pharmacy or call 1-300-SHAKES. VitaDiet. Time to try it.
Another sponsor.
If it's time to move into aged care, finding the right place for you at the start is vital. Kirsty from All Steps Aged Care has been through each of the 67 facilities and can help recommend the most suitable options for you. Save your family time and get the right advice now. Call Kirsty, a sponsor of the station, on 0423 871 688.
And you're in tune with 4CRB 89.3 FM. The Law and You is the program. 5520888 the number if you're needing some free legal advice. We presently have no callers online, so if you want to get through, now is the time to call. But while we're waiting for someone to call in, we did actually have an email from Erica in relation to an issue concerning dividing fences. And they're in a situation where they have trees that overhang from their property onto a neighbour's property, and they've lopped those trees to a height of 2.4 metres and 0.5 of a metre into their property. And the question was whether or who is responsible for lopping trees above 2.4 metres. Well, the Act actually says that it's 2.5 metres, not 2.4, but above that height, then you have to apply to QCAT for an order, which is the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal. So the tribunal will determine who's responsible or if there is any liability to lop the trees, whether they should be lopped, and at whose cost that will be done. And it's far better if you can reach an agreement with your neighbour in relation to the lopping of trees rather than end up in QCAT, because it can be a very unsatisfactory outcome. I know I was consulted by some clients a while back, and as a result of taking their neighbour to court to get trees lopped or to QCAT to get trees lopped because the neighbour wouldn't agree, they had to get arborists' reports and goodness knows what. It was an absolute nightmare. And then the court, QCAT, made orders in relation to lopping as to the percentage of the canopy that they could lop back. And the interpretation of those orders was something that was really quite difficult. And so, as I say, if you possibly can, try and resolve the matter with your neighbour without ending up in court. But if the neighbour is persistent that they want the trees above 2.5 metres to be cut back because they're blocking the... it could be legitimate reasons. They're blocking the sun to their solar panels on their roof, or the trees are ones that lose a huge amount of leaves and so they're blocking the gutters of the neighbour's property, then there can often be legitimate reasons why they need to be cut back. But over 2.5 metres, if you can't agree, it will be QCAT in Queensland that'll make the decision for you. But enough of that. We've got a few more callers online, so we'll say hello to Blake. G'day, Blake. How are you?
Hello.
Yeah, Blake. How can we help you today?
I have a question for your legal man, John.
Well, I am the legal man, so you can talk
to me. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was John on the telephone. It's hard to tell.
No, that's quite okay. How can I help?
This is probably more technical than anything else. Currently, a lot of people are determining their DNA through Ancestry.com.
Mm-hmm.
What are the implications if somebody finds that their father on their birth certificate is not, in fact, their father, which then means the driver's license and the passport and all those sorts of things are all not correct? What are the implications?
Well, no, because whoever's recorded on the birth certificate will in fact still be accepted as the legally as the legal party. So there would be a process to be gone through after you've done that, and as to whether you want to have your records changed, and you'd have to apply to the court. In Queensland, the Registrar of Births, Deaths and Marriages to have the correction made. And I'm not sure whether the DNA report from Ancestry.com, I know they do it. I've not had anything to do with it. So I don't know whether it would be accepted by the Registrar of Births, Deaths and Marriages, but it would be up to the person who's had the test made to get their records corrected. And it would only be after they had their birth certificate corrected, if that were possible, that they would then, of course, get their license in another name. So there's probably a lot of people who might find it out, but, they've lived their whole life believing that a particular person was their father, and they may have no desire to change that situation.
Yeah, I've discovered that a few times, but it seems that this test is fairly accurate.
As I say, Blake, it would be up to the person to decide what they wanted to do with the information they got, but they certainly don't have any problem as far as their birth certificate, license or passport are concerned, because they've been issued genuinely in accordance with official government records.
Okay, so you are not who you are.
You're not who you seem to be, but
true.
You are still who you are. Okay,
wonderful.
Then.
Thank you very much for that. Appreciate
all the best. Cheers now. Bye-bye. And the time marches on, just past 13 minutes to 10, 13 minutes to 11, daylight saving time. And a very good morning to Maureen. G'day, Maureen. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
How can I help you today?
Good, thank you. I've just got a question.
Sure.
We're executives for my brother's will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's got a partner. He's made provisions for her that she can stay in his house as long as she likes, like she's got to look after it, maintain it, and pay all the rents and all that.
Yep.
Now, what we're worried about is when our brother passes away, that's all there. Can she change any of that or claim more?
Well, if your brother passes away, is she basically a de facto partner?
Virtually, yeah.
How long have they been together for?
About 6 years now.
Yeah, well, she's definitely a de facto partner. So she comes within the class of persons who could make a claim on his estate. So legally, she would be able to make a claim and say that the life interest is not adequate provision for her, and there should be greater provision. And she could apply for different orders from the court, but it would be entirely at the court's discretion in all the circumstances. So looking at her financial position, the lifestyle she's enjoyed with your brother, and whether the terms of the will make sufficient provision for that lifestyle to be maintained. But the short answer to your question is that because she's a de facto partner, she does come within the class of persons who can claim. Doesn't mean she will.
Oh,
all right?
Yes, okay then.
Okay,
yes,
Maureen.
Thanks very much.
All the very best. And we say now a very good morning to Michael. G'day, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you this morning?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks. You're not the Michael who rang me last week, are you?
I am indeed.
The one about malfeasance and misfeasance?
That's right.
I've been trying to get to the point where I could answer your question for you, Michael, but I can tell you that a malfeasance is an unlawful or wrongful act, and it's usually a crime or tort. A misfeasance is performing a lawful or proper act, particularly an official act, improperly or inadequately, or performed in a way that involves malice. So you can have corporate misfeasance is an act by an officer of a company in the nature of a breach of trust or breach of duty. Misfeasance in public office is the only tort that's exclusively concerned with public authorities or persons that hold public office.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, the statute of limitations, if it is a tort that they have committed, it is 6 years. If it's a crime, then there's usually no statute of limitations for a crime.
And what is a crime.
A crime?
Did you say crime?
Crime. C-R-I-M-E.
Oh, there's no statute.
No, not for a crime. So if the act that they've done is a criminal act, then there's normally no statute of limitations on that.
If
it's a tort, then the statute of limitation is 6 years. Now, I think from memory last week, you mentioned this happened about 20 years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so if it was simply, if it wasn't a criminal act that was committed, then you're probably out of luck.
Yeah, basically a pretty big cover-up that wouldn't probably be criminal. That,
well, the only way you could probably determine whether it's criminal or not would be to go and see the police in relation to it, and or go and see if it was something involving public office. You could go and see the Crime and Misconduct Commission or the appropriate organisation in the state where it occurred.
Yeah, they're not bound by statute of limitations, I guess.
Well, if it's a criminal act, no.
But even if...
They could still take action. It may not get you any compensation if that's what you were seeking, but it may get you satisfaction.
Yeah, it's more principle than anything else, but I probably wouldn't be able to get them to look at it. It's so old.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, then.
But I might try that avenue, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be criminal. Yeah, well, that's very good. Thank you.
Okay, for
that.
Michael.
I've got one other thing, but totally unrelated, but just came up.
Sure.
We bought into a new estate. It's still being built, houses everywhere. And they told everybody, the developers, that there was going to be some shops and stuff built in a certain area, right in the centre of the estate, really.
Right.
And now the estate's three quarters finished. We've been told that's not going to happen. Is there any recourse there, do you reckon?
Well, possibly.
Because it affects the value.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, if there's any material that's been published by the developer that said this was going to happen, there probably is unlikely to be any special condition in your contract which said that this was going to happen.
But, it was all verbal. But everyone
verbal, then yes, the only possibility would be for you and all the other owners to perhaps look at taking action as a collective group against the developer, but I certainly wouldn't be recommending that you look at it on your own.
Oh no!
All right then.
How many people do you need for class action anyway?
Oh well, you probably only need two. But I mean, what you want to do though is spread the burden, and you'd be wanting to get a law firm that is going to take it on a no-win, no-fee basis, because you certainly wouldn't want to be possibly at the wrong end of an order for costs. All right.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay. Well, I've taken enough of your time, and
no
thank
worries,
you very
Michael,
much for your inquiry.
All the best. All the best. And the time's just passed, or just coming up to 6:30 to 10. We did have Mary online, but she seems to have dropped out. So, Mary, I'm sorry we've taken so much time to get to you, but if you could just call back, we will be able to take your call before the program finishes, if you could call straight back. In the meantime, we say a very good morning to Graham. G'day, Graham. How are you?
I'm sorry we've taken so much time to get to you, but if you could just call back.
Graham, if you're there, can you turn your radio off? Because we're on delay. Yeah, so you'll be very confused. You'll be hearing the program a number of seconds after the event.
I've got one ear on that, and I'll turn it down as soon as I say Graham, yeah.
Okay, well, we're right here, Graham. How can we help?
Oh, sorry, John. Yeah, look, just in regards to palm trees on fence lines and the prongs themselves, they weigh the 30-foot part. 30-foot trees, the palm prongs weigh about 3 kilo. As a million to one, not a million to one, but I got hit on the head with a palm prong after I'd been at the neighbours next door to do something about their gear. And we've also I got hit on the head, and I've said, look, I'm going to take you down the track if you don't do something about your palm trongs or your palm trees. And I have got solar, and they do wipe my solar out for 30% of the year. So they're at a plus. We've got bamboo, which is 35 feet tall, and that's with a big circumference. That's a big 6-inch circumference bamboo. Without going through any channels at all, I've tried talking to these idiot people, and unfortunately, they just don't seem to. They're places like a jungle, John, and they've got the problem all around their property. But they're a young 40 year old couple, and they just like the look of the palms,
right?
At the cost of everything, and the stuff off the bamboo. And I said, look, my wife's 80 years of age. She slips on any of that stuff. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be down the track on you. And they just don't seem to want to ring a bell.
All right, what you need to do, Graeme, how high are the palm trees?
30 feet.
Okay, so they're well over 2.5 metres. You need to bring an application to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal under the Neighbourhood Dispute Resolution Act. The tree clearing or the tree pruning provisions under that legislation. What I would suggest you do is, because the trees are over 2.5 metres, I don't think you can even serve them with a notice under the Act. So what you've got to do is basically bring an application to QCAT. If you ring your local magistrate's court, they will be able to assist you with the forms, etc., that you need to do that, or alternatively go into the magistrate's court and they should be able to help you.
All right, then? Yeah.
Okay, Graeme.
It's just a matter of time before. And the stuff off bamboo, John, I don't know if you've had the big stuff bamboo in your house, in your property. It's in my garage. It's into the house.
Yep.
The stuff that comes off it,
yep.
It's unbelievable, this sort of legislation can't be put in place by somebody who understands what the hell is going on.
Well, you'll need to have plenty of photos and all that sort of thing, Graeme. But as I say, get on to QCAT. We'll have to leave it there, though, because unfortunately we've got another call. Thanks. Bye. Mary. Good morning, Mary. Hello, Mary. You're back?
Yes, I
am. Yeah, sorry about that, Mary. How can we help you?
Yes, well, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I've received an account that I believe could be a scam, but I don't know whether I can say over air who it's from.
No,
it's
if it's not a telecommunications company that you have any dealings with, then I would simply ignore it. Alternatively, what you don't want to do is ring the number on that account, because often what they do is they have a number and you call that number and it's an overseas number or one of these numbers where you get absolutely hit for six on telephone costs. So what I would be more inclined to do is ring your own telecommunications provider.
Which I have done.
Yeah, and tell them about the account you've received. Or you can ring the Telecommunications Ombudsman, which might be a good idea. Have you got a pen handy?
I do, yes.
Okay, so the number for the Telecommunications Ombudsman is 1-800 063-058.
058.
So give them a call and just let them know what you've received and who it's from. And just see what they have to say in relation to it. They may, in fact, refer you to the ACCC or someone like that, the Australian Consumer Commission. But speak to them in the first instance and see what they have to say.
Thank you so much. I spent a whole hour with this telecommunication and I had no luck at all.
Is that with your own provider?
Yes,
right.
And they seem to think I'm not even with this particular.
No, no. Well, that's the reason why it's undoubtedly, or more than likely, a scam. Normally, the purpose in it is to try and get you to ring a telephone number so that they can hold you on the call for a long period of time and rack up a huge amount of costs against it. And it's to an overseas number, and you'll find that you'll get a bill for about $50 or $60 for the phone call. The other thing, too, that you've got to be very careful about with these scams is that sometimes it can be a way to get access to your computer. So just ring the Telecommunications Ombudsman. All right?
Yeah, thank you so much.
All the
John.
Best.
Have a nice
Bye now.
Day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Until next week, as always, goodbye and God bless.